Financially screwed. She was still in enough of a foul mood that when the email came around asking for everyone's menu contributions for the following Sunday's dinner, Octavia waited for Eva to respond, which she did, with sweet corn succotash. Octavia pressed delete on that email. Octavia believed that morality was a learned social construct, as was responsibility, humility, and even generosity. Humans were born evil, as little sociopaths intent purely on slaking their own impulsive desires, and many never learned to be good, or evolved traits like empathy or compassion, instead remaining selfish, destructive small children for life. Eva Torvald, that unrepentant, arrogant crowd-pleaser, was the most devious of all the small children Octavia knew and, ergo, would only be corrected into a life of humility through being broken. Octavia arrived at Robbie's house at the exact same time she always did, a green ceramic bowl under her arm, and walked in without knocking, as usual. "Oh, hey," Robbie said, entering from the kitchen. "You're early." "What's in that bowl?" Eva asked, following him. She had beaten Octavia here somehow. "Sweet corn succotash," Octavia said. "Ha, that's funny. I made that too." Robbie looked annoyed. "Didn't you see the email?" Octavia shook her head. "I never got the email."
"Well, if you don't get it, you need to text me or call me," Robbie said. "Now we're going to have a shitload of succotash."
"I may just dump mine in the trash right now," Eva said, "after your awesome tomato hot dish last time." Octavia didn't recall Eva praising her heirloom tomato dish last week. In any case, it was much too late for her to put on a show of false humility.
"I'd hate to see you do that," Octavia said, "after witnessing your magic Caesar."
"I have an idea," Eva said. "Let's put each of them in bowls of Robbie's so we can't tell who made which one. How's that?"
"Whatever floats your boat," Octavia said, though secretly she liked the idea. The problem was, you could tell one from the other at 100 feet. One had diced organic red pepper, Octavia's, while the other had French-cut Blue Lake string beans, Eva's. The corn in Eva's was also whiter.
"Why did you do yours with green beans?" Octavia asked Eva in the kitchen as their succotash was being transferred, for no good reason now as Octavia saw it, to their more anonymous new homes.
"I often use okra, but green beans are in season locally. What kind of sweet corn did you use?"
"I think it's Northern Extra Sweet Bicolor."
"Oh, nice," Octavia smiled. In her research over the last 2 weeks, she learned that Northern Extra Sweet was an extremely common variety of corn. You could get it anywhere.
"Where'd you get it?"
"Oh, I drove to Mr. Zong's farm down in Dakota County this afternoon and got some right off the stalk."
"Just today, before you got here? How'd you pull that off?"
"It wasn't a long drive."
"What kind of corn is in yours?"
"I got heirloom Golden Bantam, from a woman who sells herbs at the St. Paul Farmer's Market."
"Wow, never heard of it," Eva said.
"Who's the herb vendor?"
"Anna Halavik. But she doesn't sell it to the public. You have to ask."
Octavia had the inside track. She heard about it from a friend of hers who dated Anna's son Dougie the year before.
Octavia knew she had won this round. With American cornfields at close to 90% GMO corn, and all of the numerous crosses and hybridizations and so-called improvements made to corn even before genetic intervention, Anna Halavik at the farmer's market was growing something almost unheard of, an open-pollinated corn variety that hadn't changed a bit in more than 100 years. From what she was told, Anna had inherited the seed stock from her grandfather, who'd bought it from a catalog when Burpee first introduced Golden Bantam 8-row back in 1902. This was the exact corn Octavia's great-grandparents ate at their farm near Hunter, North Dakota. Old-fashioned, plump, firm, milky kernels that burst in your mouth and were so sweet it could have been served for dessert. No one, not even Eva, with the fancy ingredients, could have gotten hold of this sweet corn.
You had to know someone to make sure you were getting the real deal, and Octavia, as luck would have it, did.
Can't wait to try it, Eva said.
The seating chart had devolved a bit from the week before. Adam Snelling still sat across from Sarah Vong, but now Eva sat across from Robbie and Octavia sat across from Elodie. Octavia did get to sit next to Robbie, however, which in a lot of ways was really better than sitting across from him. Lacey, meanwhile, sat at the tail with her baby, facing no one again.
"Why do I always have to sit down here?" she asked.
It was rare for her to complain. Octavia felt that Lacey should be happy just to be there, and figured that she had been. Everyone stared down the table at her.
"It's just the way it turned out," Robbie said.
"Can someone switch with me?" she asked, and looked at her friend, the woman who had invited her.
"Octavia?"
Octavia shook her head. "I need to be here. I'm handling one of the early dishes."
Robbie shook his head. "You don't need to be anywhere, Octavia."
She was stung that he didn't seem to want to be next to her as much as she wanted to be next to him, but put on a smile. "It's easier to distribute from over here. Her dishes always come at the end."
"Fine," Robbie said. "Well, sorry, Lacey."
Lacey nodded and sighed. She used to have a perfectly nice place to sit, across from someone and everything, at least until Fancy Eva showed up, and was probably doing the math in her head just then, figuring that out.
"You know, I'm going to go," she said, and stood up.
"All right," said Octavia.
"Why?" asked Adam Snelling.
Adam was super nice like that.
"You guys don't like my food? You make me sit here at the end of the table by myself? You never talk about anything I know, and you never even ask me any questions about myself."
"You shouldn't wait to be asked," Robbie said. "I don't." This from Robbie passed for empathy.
"Well, see you later," Lacey said, and stomped to the kitchen, coming back out with the Tupperware bowl of ambrosia fruit salad she'd made with canned fruit cocktail and Cool Whip.
Her baby daughter had started to cry from all of the jostling, and Lacey had to shout over the child's wail.
"Have a good dinner party," she said, standing in the open doorway.
"Bye!" After she closed the door hard, the remaining six diners sat in silence for a moment before Robbie stood up and cleared Lacey's wine glass and silverware.
"I think in the future, when we invite a new person, we should run it by the whole group first," he said as he walked into his kitchen.
Eva, the newest person and invited by Robbie's decree, not run by the group at all, had the nerve to speak up.
"I know someone who I think might like to come," she said.
"Looking forward to hearing about them," Robbie said, setting the two white bowls of succotash on the table. Octavia tried Eva's first. She hated to say it, but it was exquisite. The green beans and corn were each just slightly firm. The bacon was fragrant and not too salty, and the nearly diaphanous white onion pieces were in that Goldilocks zone of piquancy, neither overbearing nor nominal. Then Octavia tried her own. Her corn was firm and starchy. She didn't know when Anna picked it. Octavia had just bought it the morning of the day before. But the kernels hadn't kept their sugar. Some of them even felt like loose teeth in her mouth. She looked around the table and saw people spitting into their napkins.
"I'll have more of the one with the beans," Elodie said, and Adam quickly concurred.
"That bitch, Anna Halavik. It should be required for a sweet corn vendor to post the exact date and time of their harvest to avoid these awful mistakes." Eva, of course, had used corn that was probably only 4 or 5 hours old at that point. That had made all the difference. Not what damn varietal it was.
"Whose was whose?" Sarah asked with her loud, disharmonious, harpy voice.
"I brought the one with the red pepper," Eva said. "It was really good a day ago. I don't know what happened."
Before Octavia could even gather her thoughts, everyone started talking.
"The sugars in sweet corn can turn to starch really fast," Sarah said. "You're still so amazing for someone your age, so amazing."
Eva nodded,
Thanks. I know I still have a lot to learn.
This might actually be my favorite thing you've ever made, Elodie said, looking at Octavia. This could win awards. Adam nodded and smiled, mouthful.
Octavia is back, ladies and gentlemen, Sarah said.
Robbie, who'd seen the women transfer their succotash into his bowls, said nothing. He just stared at the side of Octavia's head, the way someone stares at a theater curtain in the moments before the play begins.
Thanks, everyone, Octavia said, watching as Adam gathered everyone's plates, mounds of her golden bantam succotash sitting, lightly touched, on everyone.
The next day, Robbie insisted on meeting Octavia for drinks at Horseless Carriage, his favorite old man bar, for 5 p.m. happy hour. Though Octavia was busy updating her resume, she was going to leave off her previous employer altogether and just tell people she'd been volunteering with children the last 2 years. She obviously agreed to meet him. When she arrived, he was halfway through a martini already, sitting under a backlit sign advertising a prime rib special, playing with his cell phone. The place smelled like stale popcorn and barkeeper's friend, and the handful of other people there were hunched over pull tabs at the bar or watching baseball on silent TVs. Robbie looked up from his phone and nodded when she entered, but did not put down the phone, much less rise from his seat like a gentleman. I'm kind of seeing Eva, Robbie said. I just wanted to tell you. She'd suspected this travesty was underway, but actually hearing it hit Octavia in the heart with a cast-iron skillet.
Why did you need to tell me that in person? She asked.
Because I know you like me.
Well, yeah, as a friend. I like you as a friend.
Have it your way, he said. I actually did think about sleeping with you at one point, but you seem like the type that would get all psycho afterwards. Octavia took a deep breath. I'm so glad we skipped all that. I have been meaning to ask you, though. How come you didn't say anything about the succotash during the dinner yesterday?
What do you mean?
You saw us put our succotash into bowls. You were there in the kitchen.
I don't remember that, but I'd had a few.
All right. She got the bartender's attention and ordered a Long Island iced tea, which was wildly passé, but Christ, she needed it. And it wasn't like anyone in this bar knew her.
So what's going to happen to you guys when you move to Bali?
What's going to happen to who?
You and Eva.
Well, I don't know, maybe she'll come with.
What kind of woman would just drop everything and run off with you?
Octavia knew she would have skipped town indefinitely and left for Bali with Robbie at any moment, at least until maybe 5 minutes ago.
Have you been to her place?
God, no. She lives in a totally sketchy apartment with her dad off Lake Street. I was there a few days ago, and when I was waiting for her to come down, I seriously thought I was going to get shot. If I were her, I'd get the hell out of there the first chance I had.
So that's it. You think you can rescue her?
Well, who the hell knows, Robbie said. But do you know who she's bringing to the next dinner?
Mitch Diego.
Nobody will have to bring anything. He's going to make all the food. How do you like that?
I'm intrigued, Octavia said.
For the dinner with Mitch Diego, Octavia wore her best dress, a chocolate BCBG jersey dancer dress with a plunging neckline, cinched at the waist with a red wool belt. It wasn't a summer color. The dress was from the fall 2008 season, but it literally stopped men on the street, so screw it. Mitch Diego looked like a slightly heavier version of the pictures on his website, but he still had a look that Octavia lusted after. A beard of silver and charcoal, with slick, curly obsidian hair and dizzying brown topaz eyes. She even loved the black chest hair popping up from the neckline of his white pearl snap shirt. Not a trendy look, but she admired men who ran with it. He looked Octavia up and down but didn't introduce himself, so neither did she. But she caught him looking so many times she started folding her arms in front of her chest. Eva stood in the corner of Robbie's kitchen next to his KitchenAid mixer, watching Robbie and Mitch from a distance. Robbie touched her every time he passed by her, and she touched him back,
rarely speaking to him or Mitch, but obviously happy to be along for this ride, in an exquisite kitchen with a rich, handsome man friend and a legendary local chef. Adam Snelling froze when he walked into the kitchen and saw Octavia. "You look real beautiful," he said to her face, in a way that seemed like it was involuntary, like he just had to say it, which was nice, and took a cigarette out of his pocket. The clean white cylinder shook between his fingers. "Give me one of those," Octavia said, and led him out to the backyard. For some reason, Mitch Diego followed them. "Bum smoke?" he asked Adam. Adam held out the pack for Mitch. "You don't need to be in the kitchen?" Octavia asked, preemptively crossing her arms in front of her chest. "Dirty little secret," Mitch said. "Eva has saved my life. She does everything I can do, and people can't tell the difference. I'm actually writing a book now. I have time to write a book."
"What's it called?"
"Topless Girls and Bottomless Sangria, Hot Times in Spanish Kitchens. You know anyone who could help me with a book proposal?" Robbie sat across from Eva at the end of the table, then Sarah across from Elodie, and in a new twist, Adam across from Octavia at the other end. She was hoping that Mitch, who'd be in the Lacey Deitch position, would sit next to her, but when Mitch saw the table, he left the room and came back in from the study with a desk chair, which he put at the head of the table. Octavia wondered why no one had thought of that before. "Tonight's menu," Mitch Diego announced, "is summer corn chowder made from golden bantam sweet corn. Main course is slow-cooked organic pork shoulder tacos with mint, black beans, and Wisconsin feta cheese, and salsa made from Nebraska wedding and Cherokee purple heirlooms. Dessert is Paula Red apple crisp." Everyone applauded, and Octavia watched as Eva rose and disappeared into the kitchen. The meal that Eva made and Mitch Diego took credit for was predictably incredible. People begged for leftovers. Sarah Vong demanded that Mitch Diego open a food truck. Robbie claimed that it was the best meal he'd ever had in his home. The diners lingered over the extra salsa, a beautiful blend of yellow and purple heirloom tomatoes from heirloom Johnny Lau at the St. Paul Farmers Market.
"Why do you buy from him?" Mitch Diego complained to Eva in front of everyone. "He's too expensive and he's an asshole."
"He's always been nice to me," Eva said. It could have been the 90-degree weather and the surfeit of Elevie Pickett's amazing wine pairings and the fact that Sarah had to leave early to pick someone up at the airport, but the remaining three women and three men found their way into pairs and were dancing in the living room, touching each other's sweaty bodies and then draped on them, sitting on each other's laps during breaks. Octavia recalled lying across Adam's legs, her head arched over the armrest of the sofa, looking upside down at Elodie, Mitch, Robbie, and Eva dancing on the hardwood floor to Kids by MGMT. The smile on Eva's inverted face was so unrestrained and beautiful. Octavia actually felt herself feeling happy for the stupid girl. She still couldn't watch Robbie kiss her, but she was starting to feel okay about how things had turned out, maybe. Octavia was also surprised that she'd begun to find Adam attractive. He wasn't her type at all. Gangly, with a cheap haircut and stubble, and a love of cheap short-sleeved plaid shirts. She'd hardly spoken to him at all for the first few months they'd shared these meals together in this house. He hadn't even registered to her as a sexual being. Now, all of a sudden, she wanted to lead him behind the tool shed and let him take all of her clothes off, and she wasn't even sure exactly why. If the afterglow from outdoor sex hadn't lingered for the next few days, it would have been another horrifying week in Octavia's life. First of all, how was she supposed to know that the stupid dashboard alarm on her BMW was telling her that her coolant tank was empty? Now she needed to replace the radiator and a bunch of hoses, and she didn't have that kind of money anymore. Also, she got a phone call on Monday afternoon from her high school friend, Jessica Michelet, who was a fellow frontline on the volleyball team. She said that Sunday night, Lacey Deitch was walking through her neighborhood, pushing her infant daughter in a stroller, when a guy in a pickup truck made a right turn and hit her, dragging her under the truck
for 100 feet before he stopped. Her stomach was split open, and her intestines were prolapsed onto the asphalt. She died before the ambulance even arrived. The stroller somehow wasn't hit. They found it half pushed onto the center median, the baby soundly sleeping inside. Later that week, Robbie announced that there was going to be just one more Sunday dinner before he and Eva moved to Bali, and it was going to be a big one. A Labor Day wine and cheese fundraiser to raise money for Eva's dad's medical care and nursing home fees, to take care of him for the length of time that he and Eva would be away. They would charge $100 a plate, no exceptions, but figured that people might pay that much for an all-day, all-night party of wine and appetizers by Bar Garocha's famous executive chef, Mitch Diego. Octavia showed up early in a sleeveless ivory dress. Last chance to wear white in 2009, having driven over in Adam's Honda Accord, walking with him to Robbie's front door, arm in arm. "Have you paid in advance?" Robbie asked at the door. He was wearing a tie and holding a clipboard. "Paid?" Octavia asked. "We're your friends. We get in free." "No one gets in free," Robbie said. "Eva's dad has lots of medical bills and needs a full-time home health care nurse. That's what this is about."
Since when did Robbie Kramer get altruistic? "Wow, your girlfriend must have a magic pussy," she said.
Robbie frowned at her. For a famously blunt guy, he hated perverse or immodest conversation. He felt coarseness was blue-collar and beneath him. She supposed that every man, or even a 4-year-old in a man's body like Robbie, had to have a code. Octavia stared at him.
"You know I don't have that kind of money. I've been unemployed for a month. I can't even afford to fix my car."
"I can spot you," Adam said, because he was so nice.
"No, you work at a bakery. You can't spend $200 on appetizers."
"Yeah, but it's for our friend's dad," he said.
"Not really. It's so this one can run off with his 20-year-old girlfriend."
While they were talking, a large Jamaican-looking guy ambled up the sidewalk behind them.
"Hey, I paid in advance," he said. "Ross Swally from Simple Space Solutions?"
Robbie checked the clipboard and waved the guy in. From the look of the list, it didn't look like they were going to have any trouble making money and didn't need to soak their friends. Robbie turned to Octavia and Adam.
"If you guys need to run to an ATM, we'll be going for a while."
"Screw it," Octavia said, turning her back.
"Come on, Adam." She never saw Robbie Kramer again. She saw Eva Torvald 3 more times. The first time was at a popular cafe in Loring Park, a block down from the apartment that Octavia could no longer afford. It was 2 weeks after Labor Day, and the leaves weren't changing color yet, but there was already a soft bite in the breeze, and the outdoor tables were full of Minnesotans plundering the final days of summer. Inside the warm brick-walled building, full of young people on laptops and cell phones and well-dressed couples noshing over breakfast pastries, Eva sat at the thick wooden table farthest from the windows, under a vintage French poster for Lillet. Her hair looked even crappier than usual, and her face was red and blotchy.
"Thanks for meeting me," she said.
"Sorry again about not making it to your fundraiser. We couldn't afford it."
"It's okay. Have you heard from Robbie?"
"No, not in weeks." For some reason, Eva looked crushed when Octavia said this.
"I thought you guys were leaving for Bali."
"He left," Eva said, putting both of her hands over her face. Octavia watched her body shudder with deep breaths.
"Robbie left for Bali already?"
"I thought you were going with." Eva wiped her face.
"I can't go with. We only raised $6,700. It's not enough for everything. I can't just leave my dad here. I just can't."
As someone who hadn't even spoken to her own dad in more than 2 months, Octavia was touched and confused by Eva's loyalty to someone who apparently hadn't done her much good and was a total money pit besides. And more important, she also felt like she'd seriously dodged a bullet with Mr. Kramer.
$6,700, that's got to pay for...
We still owe 40 grand for my dad's liver transplant, Eva said. Plus, my dad needs someone to cook for him and give him his insulin shots on schedule and help him do the laundry and dishes. It's a lot.
It's still almost 7 grand. That's got to help.
Eva shook her head.
Robbie stole half of it.
He said he earned it.
What? That shithead? He doesn't need your money. Sue him for it.
Eva held a brown paper napkin against her wet eyes. That's a stupid amount to hire a lawyer for. Not like I can even afford a lawyer.
But it's the principle of the thing, and maybe you can get damages. It's gone. He stole it.
You know what? Have another fundraiser. For the same thing 2 weeks after the last one?
Then don't call it a fundraiser. Just call it a fancy meal.
But there's nowhere to even have it.
Well, have it anywhere. Have it outside somewhere. When the weather's still nice. Get Mitch Diego to cook again, and you're golden.
He didn't even show up to this last one.
But you still raised almost $7,000?
And people were happy?
Eva nodded, wiping her face.
And screw Mitch Diego. I don't like him anyway.
You know, what's funny is,
I think he really likes you. He talks about you all the time.
Such interesting food for thought, but at the time, Octavia was happy and wasn't interested. Adam had even started biking to work so she could have his car while she looked for a job. And that was his idea, not hers. It was something to be around people who thought like that.
I'm with somebody, she said. A nice man.
Well, I gotta go make lunch for my dad, Eva said, finishing her water. If you hear from Robbie, let me know. I know you guys were close.
What a sucker, Octavia thought as she hugged her. Of course Robbie didn't actually love her. He had robbed her and fobbed her and tossed her aside to be stuck in Minnesota with her sickly dad while he wrote his memoir in Bali. Robbie had goals, and therefore he knew who could help him and exactly how long to keep them around. And here were Octavia and Eva, thousands of miles from him, broke and cursing his name. The second to last time Octavia saw Eva was actually just 3 weeks later. Elodie Pickett, whom Octavia hadn't heard from in forever, emailed that she and Eva had a business proposition and asked if she wanted to meet up somewhere. Octavia had just gotten a part-time job on Lake Street working as a discard counselor for Small Space Solutions. She had been hired by a guy named Ross Wally, who claimed to have been at Robbie and Eva's Labor Day fundraiser. She went into people's homes and told them what they should get rid of, which she found she had a talent for. Eva's apartment is right nearby, Elodie texted. Let's just meet there. Eva's apartment was arguably worse than even Robbie had implied. The whole place smelled like beef stock and mold, and the one place to sit was occupied by a fat man whom Octavia assumed was Eva's dad. He was watching one of Octavia's favorite shows, Cater Mania with Miles Binder. The episode where Miles and his crazy staff try to throw a Thanksgiving party for 100 people on 3 hours' notice. A classic. Eva kissed her dad on the head. What are you watching this for? She asked him.
It reminds me of you, he said. She laughed. This show annoys the hell out of me. He glanced behind him at Octavia. Who is she supposed to be? Octavia, now feeling violently awkward and not wanting that gross man to look at her, stepped into the small kitchen. It was the only room that was somewhat generously appointed, and it was crammed with beaten appliances and kitchenware. Stacks of pans and pots were piled on each of the stove's burners. But before she could really take it all in, she was pulled into the unit's one bedroom, which was Eva's. The bedroom was as spare as the rest of the house. And except for a few of the dresses and blouses hanging in the closet, there was not much to suggest that it was a girl's room, with its plain white bed sheets and white particle board nightstand. Instead of a dresser, stacks of transparent plastic tubs held her underwear and socks. The most interesting features were the worn posters for the Smiths and Bikini Kill taped on the walls, and the stacks of cookbooks piled on the floor. Many with bookmarks sticking out of them at all angles, and tags on the spines from library sales. For lack of anywhere better, Everyone sat on top of the bed, like college kids. This made Octavia feel uneasy, but not as much as the apartment did in general. Was this poverty? She'd never seen people who actually lived like this. It was almost like the apartment from the movie Trainspotting. It made her nervous, like she was holding on to the edge of an inner tube in a current, and the slightest shock might suck her down into the standard of living with these people. Now she realized why even though poor people had the numbers, they could never start a revolution. They feared and despised the people one step below them, and for good reason. "So what's up?" she asked. "I can't stay long." A voice from down the hall rattled the women's bones. "Eva!" the man's voice shouted. "When's dinner?"
"I'll be right there," Eva said, and scrambled off the bed.
"Sorry, guys, I'm making my dad a rosemary shallot beef stew. I gotta go see if it's done." That explained the beef part of the smell.
"No worries," Octavia said. "I'll get her up to speed," Elodie said, and looked at Octavia.
"How are you?"
"Good. How are things at the nonprofit?"
"Chugging along. They promoted Sammy to take your job."
"Ha, he can't even write a cover letter."
"He's learning," Elodie shrugged. "Anyway, Eva and I are going to start doing Epicurean dinners around town, and we just wanted to tell you that we could use your help."
"What do you mean, Epicurean dinners around town?"
"Eva said it was kind of your idea.
Just sort of throw dinner parties at random places and charge people a flat rate of, like, $100 for a really fancy meal and make it kind of exclusive?
Why not just open a restaurant?"
"Your idea's way better. We don't have to rent property and pass safety codes and get a liquor license and that kind of stuff. We don't have to be open on a Tuesday when there's only, like, two people eating. We can just move in somewhere for one night and move out. Are you interested in helping us cook and make the menu?"
"I don't know. I already have a job."
After being unemployed for 2 months, it almost felt ostentatious to say that.
"Well, this would just be like once or twice a month. We already have like 30 people coming to the first one this Friday. That's at least $3,000 that we'd split three ways."
"After expenses."
"I suppose, yeah, but that wouldn't be a lot. And I'm paying for the wine out of my share."
"I don't know. It sounds like a lot of work."
This was sounding to Octavia like a lot of labor and expense, and without Mitch Diego's name attached, and Robbie's money and connections, could they be sure that even 30 people would show up? They were talented chicks, sure, but it takes so much more than that. From where they were starting, in a small bedroom in a crappy apartment, sitting on low thread count sheets, it looked like they were going to take a bath on this one. And Octavia didn't need any more shame in her life at that point. The volume on Catermania with Miles Binder got substantially louder from down the hall. Eva appeared in the doorway.
"Hey, can you guys please keep it down? My dad says your conversation is bothering him."
Elodie looked behind herself at Eva.
"Was the door closed?"
"Yeah, but he said he could hear you through the door. I just don't think he's used to people being over."
Octavia nodded.
"You don't say."
"Anyway, you guys want any beef stew? It's almost ready."
Octavia got up from the bed.
"I should get going."
Eva watched Octavia as she passed through her bedroom doorway.
"Did Elodie tell you about our dinner party on Friday?"
"I'm going to have to pass, guys. I just got too much going on."
Eva looked sincerely disappointed.
"You're seriously one of the best chefs I know. Seriously."
"That's nice of you to say," Octavia said.
"And we don't want you as an employee or something. We want you as an actual partner."
"I know, and I'm flattered, but thank you."
Eva and Elodie gave each other a what-do-we-do-now look that Octavia saw. And it was actually kind of touching that these two kids thought so much of her. At least, they did once.
"You should at least come by and eat for free and let us know what you think," Eva offered when Octavia was on her way out the door. Octavia and Adam totally forgot about it by the time Friday rolled around, and neither of them even heard about how it went. So Octavia assumed it had gone poorly, and those girls wouldn't ask anything of her again.
The last time that Octavia saw Eva was 4 years later, in the produce section of the Seward Co-op. Octavia was there because it was her lunch break and it was cheap, and she'd taken to buying things in bulk for the family she now had with Adam, which included a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. "Octavia?" she heard a woman's voice say. Eva Torvald no longer resembled the awkward ingenue she'd first met in Robbie Kramer's kitchen. She'd evolved in every possible way. She was now a grand, luminous 24-year-old with tree-limb arms, Angelina Jolie lips, scarred chef hands, cinderblock feet, generous breasts, and the kind of ass that rap songs are written about. She hadn't grown into being a woman. She had become a woman with an exclamation mark, the sort of hardy feminine brute of the Pleistocene from which all women, great and frail, are descended. Octavia was relieved to see this forceful, glowing Eva was dressed the same as ever, although in a clean, nicer version of her stock outfit, but with what looked like an expensive hairstyle, tasteful makeup, and brand new New Balance shoes. "How are you?" Eva asked. Octavia found herself taking a step backwards when Eva spoke. "I've seen your blog. It looks like you're doing well." Octavia's blog, where she exhaustively documented her children's lives every day, had been named one of the top 10 mom blogs in the Twin Cities by the Minneapolis paper, and had garnered her a bit of attention. She was occasionally stopped by a stranger who knew her from the blog. But she never would have guessed that someone like Eva Torvald had read it. In fact, she'd pretty much forgotten about Eva Torvald altogether. "Thank you. I just hope other new mothers get something out of it. We're all in it together, you know? How are you doing?" "Same old, same old. Just buying some emergency ginger, you know." "How are you doing? Are you working in a restaurant?" "No, no," Eva said. "Still doing the dinner party that we started back in October of 09. It's been very labor-intensive." "Is Elodie still with you?" "No, no. Elodie moved on. She and her partner opened a wine bar in Uptown. It's doing good. It's right next door to where Bar Garocha used to be." "Oh, yeah," Octavia said, like she'd heard of this. She hadn't been able to afford a nice meal out regularly in over 4 years, and was out of the loop. "What's it called?" "You'll like this. She named it Deech, in honor of our old friend Lacey. Once a year she holds a fundraiser barrel tasting for Emma Deech's college fund. You should swing by. Elodie would love to see you." "And the dinner party's going well? You still getting around 30 people?" "No, no, it sounds crazy, but we're actually averaging 150, but we're trying to scale it back to around 20 and have the events be more unusual." "How much are you charging per dinner, if you don't mind me asking?" "Right now, about $500. "150 people paying $500 each? How often?" "About once a month. None in December, twice each in August and September. But now we're starting a new reservation system, expanding the staff and hosting dinners in way more exotic locations. It's going to increase our overhead like crazy. You don't even want to know. We're going to have to raise our price a whole lot immediately, which I didn't want to do. It's a giant risk, but it might be really amazing if it works. So we're in a major state of flux right now." Octavia had no idea how to respond. She didn't know anyone with these kinds of problems. "Cool," was all she said. "Speaking of, I gotta bounce. I have a meeting with a loan officer at 3. "All right, good luck with that," Octavia said. "But hey, you ever hear from Robbie Kramer?" Eva froze, as if a stranger's toddler had just grabbed her leg. "I did. About a year ago, I did. I saw his house got foreclosed. I also heard that he's living in Thailand with a 22-year-old. "Yeah, I heard that. They were here visiting, and they tried to get into one of my dinners for free." "What did you do?" "I didn't let him in." "You didn't beat him up, slash his tires?" "No, he has what he deserves already," Eva said. "Good to see you. Don't be a stranger." In the parking lot afterward,
Octavia saw Eva walk to a shiny Honda Odyssey minivan and waited for her to drive off so she wouldn't see Octavia get into her beat-up old Pontiac Aztec that she'd bought used from Craigslist. She sat in the car and took out her cell phone and did the math. $500 times 150 people was $75,000. That times 13 was $975,000. That divided by 3 was $325,000. She could be making $325,000 a year right now instead of the $29,000 she was making as a discard counselor. More than 10 times as much if she'd remained sitting on that crappy bed in that shitty apartment 4 years ago. And also, what was Eva doing driving a minivan if she was pulling in mid-six figures? It blew Octavia's mind. It was like Eva was afraid to be rich, or didn't know how to be. In the days since, in her head, Octavia would often spend the $325,000 she could have had. She'd spend it while standing in line at the post office, at a checkout at Walmart, while making French toast for her husband and eldest daughter, while riding in Mitch's 10-year-old Mercedes with the dented fender, while lying in the snow outside his place, watching her phone, waiting for him to text. Her phone buzzed. "Not today," the word said. Not today? That old washout didn't get to tell her not today. After putting a popular restaurant out of business, Mitch Diego was lucky he had a mistress at all, let alone one as beautiful and interesting as Octavia Kincaid. She snapped to her feet and stomped out of the snowbank to his front door, her clothes dripping wet snow onto his welcome mat. She could see a light on upstairs. He was certainly home. The door was locked, so she pounded on it. He didn't answer, so she pounded on it again. With both fists, she pounded on it. Her phone buzzed. "Leave or I call the cops," it read. "Like you would dare," she texted back, and pounded with her open palm this time. She took a break and texted him, "If you don't open your door, it's over," and watched the door. Nothing happened. She pounded on it again. She pounded and shouted. She took another short break and then pounded again. She didn't hear the car park in the street, the sound of a driver's side door slamming shut, or the footsteps of the man who walked up behind her. "Ma'am?" he said. She didn't turn around. "Ma'am?" he said again.
Venison. It used to be, if Geordie Snelling could change one thing about his life, it would be that rifle season went a week longer and didn't overlap with bow season. Now here it was, 2 days from the opener, and he hadn't even cleaned his goddamn Mauser yet. His brother Adam had come by early to visit their mom, and he brought his new lady friend Eva with him. For some stupid reason, they didn't wake him up when they got there, and now here he was getting up, and they were about to leave. Also, his right hand was swollen up like a turkey drumstick, and the knuckles were scraped raw. It had hurt from the moment he woke up, but his nose and face felt fine. Did he get in a fight? Maybe he won. "Hey," Eva said, smiling when Geordie walked into the living room. Eva was real tall, seemed pretty nice, and supposedly had a job as some kind of fancy chef or something. This was only the second time he'd ever even seen her, but he was already 100% sure that she was way, way better than Adam's snotty ex-wife Octavia, who nobody ever liked anyway. "What happened to your hand?" she asked. Geordie laughed. "Hell if I know," he said, crossing the room to check on his mom, who was sleeping, fully reclined in her easy chair. Since she became so bony and pale, he could never look at her body for very long. "How's she doing?" he whispered to Eva.
"Good," Eva whispered back. "She was up earlier."
"We were waiting for you to get up so we could go," Adam said. His brother looked tired, but he always looked tired, because he worked at a damn bakery for some reason. Eva's got her cousins coming into town tomorrow, and she's got to get her place ready. It was 11 a.m., and the hospice nurse Mandy should have come by now anyway. He didn't like to be alone with his mom for too long, especially when she needed her meds. What if he fucked something up? Her breathing was heavy again. She slept all the time now, and she didn't get out of her recliner too much. On their way out, Adam hugged him, and Eva hugged him kind of firmly for someone he didn't know too well, and they told Jordy that he'd be fine and to call them if he needed anything. Between them and the neighbors and his Aunt Melanie up in Inver Grove, someone was usually around, at least. After they left, he checked on his mom again, still sleeping, and went out to the second-floor apartment's balcony, the only place where he was allowed to smoke. Outside, they were cutting the forest across the street to make room for new condominiums, trying to get it done before it started snowing. It meant that all the deer in those woods were going to be flushed out into the streets and backyards just in time for mating season. What people don't understand about deer is that they're vermin. They're giant, furry cockroaches. They invade a space, reproduce like hell, and eat everything in sight. A few adult deer can eat an entire garden in a couple of hours, and not just the vegetables, but the stalks, the leaves, the roots, everything, leave you with nothing. And worse, 4 years ago, Jordy lost his high school buddy Matt Dubcek to a fucking deer. Doobie had just gotten his motorcycle license, like the week before. He was out on his 350cc Honda. Not a big engine, but more than enough bike for a newbie. Not a lot up front, though. No fender, no windscreen, no front fairing. It was night, and some buck walked out onto the highway right in front of him. He didn't even have a chance. Jordy tried to imagine that he'd have reacted differently, that his reflexes were good enough that he'd have jumped off to the side or even laid the bike down. Anything better than hitting the flank at 60 miles per hour. When they found Doobie, he was basically beheaded. He had just gotten married to this chick, Lisa, who'd done a tour in Afghanistan. Last he heard, she was up in Lakeville, pregnant with some other dude's kid, and working at the new Cracker Barrel they got up there. The intercom bleated. Someone was in the lobby. He crushed his cigarette into an empty Keystone light can on the deck. The nurse. He tapped the intercom to buzz her into the building, then stopped and looked at his reflection in the hall mirror. There was no helping what he saw in the time he had. The apartment door opened. It was Dan Jorgensen. "Hey, man," Dan said, his hand rooting around in his greasy tan Carhartt jacket. "You forgot your phone charger in my car." Dan handed it to Jordy. It was sticky from God knows what. "Thought you might want it," he said. "Hey, thanks. I had no fucking idea I even lost it." "Dude, you were beyond fucked up last night. You fucking punched a hole in the wall of Scotty's dad's garage." "That explains it," Jordy said, holding his swelled hand up to Dan's face. "Looks better today than it did last night," Dan said. "Hey, can I come in for a beer, or is your mom sleeping?" "Yeah, but the nurse'll be here in a sec," Jordy said, turning from the doorway. "Cool," Dan smiled, taking off his Carhartt stocking cap and his black steel-toed boots on the mat by the coat rack. He followed Jordy down the hallway in his chunky gray socks and turned left at the dinette while Jordy walked into the living room. Jordy patted his mom on the shoulder. She was up and had turned on the TV. A Storage Wars Texas rerun was on. And a tiny brown-haired woman and a big guy in a cowboy hat were arguing over other people's stuff. Jordy didn't know what would happen to all his mom's stuff, but he sure as hell didn't want strangers touching any of it. "Was that the nurse?" his mom asked. "No, just Dan." Jordy's mom turned and looked over her shoulder, seeing Dan just as he cracked open a Coors Light. She waved at him and said, "Hi, Dan." He raised the can and smiled. "It's already 11:20, Jordy's mom said. "I hope that's not your first beer." "Sorry to say it is, Linda. Little hair of the dog." "You look after this one," she told Dan, pointing at her son. "I sure try to." Jordy was embarrassed. Come on, he said, leading Dan toward his bedroom. Dan sat in the chair at Jordy's desk next to his Acer laptop, which was softly playing a Tool song through the attached external speakers, while Jordy sat on his mattress on the floor and drank from a bottle of Early Times.
"Smells like dirty laundry in here," Dan said.
"That's because I got a fucking ton of dirty laundry," Jordy said.
"So, what happened? Did I get in a fight with someone?" "No, but you were getting real chippy. That's why Scotty locked you in the garage."
"I don't remember none of that."
"Yeah, and, like, at 3 in the morning, we were like, 'Oh, shit, what about Jordy?' Because by then, you were locked in there for, like, 3 hours, and you were passed out on the floor of the garage next to the snowblower, and there was a big fucking hole on the side of the garage, like in the drywall."
What was I supposedly getting chippy about?
"I don't even know. I was downstairs playing pool. Scotty said you just went off. I don't think you hit anybody or anything, but Michaela got me and was like, 'Scotty wants your help with Jordy,' and you were pounding the walls and shit, and Scotty was afraid you'd break something, so we locked you in the garage."
"Shit. Is Scotty pissed at me?"
He'll get over it."
They heard a knock at the door. Dan glanced in the direction of the sound. The nurse was here. Someone else must have let her in through the security door downstairs. Maybe because she was recognized around the building. Of course, the residents here knew Dan, too, but no one's opening doors for that guy. Jordy capped the bottle, chucked it into his laundry basket, and put an Altoid in his mouth. Jordy opened the door. Mandy was standing there in her usual outfit, a short-sleeved white button-up shirt and tan slacks, and carrying a blue canvas shoulder bag of medical supplies. He agreed with Dan that Mandy was pretty hot. Some people might say she wore too much makeup, but to Jordis P. Snelling III, she wore exactly the right amount, and she smelled like how chicks smell at prom all the time. When she was there caring for his mom, it bothered him to stare at her tan arms and curly brown hair, and he never looked down her shirt when she was bent over, no matter how hot she was. Doing that kind of shit felt out of line. The weirdest part was that she was 24, a year younger than him, and was so perfect with his mom, like she'd been doing this job for a million years. How does someone that young get to be such a great hospice nurse already? Maybe if you don't fuck up your life too much, anything's possible. "Hi, Jordy," she said. "You hanging in there?"
"Yeah, I guess."
"Y'all ready for hunting season?"
"Ha, no. Still gotta pack and clean my rifle and stuff."
"How's your mom today?" She always said "your mom" to Jordy when talking about her. It always hit him a little.
"Watching Storage Wars, Texas," he said, moving aside to let her in. "My brother gave her her meds already."
She stopped on the mat and took off her white tennis shoes. "Okay, good, your brother was here." She seemed to trust Adam more than Jordy and, well, who could blame her?
"I'm Dan,"
Dan said, moving his beer to his left hand and extending his right.
"I remember," she said, watching as he lowered his hand. "Sorry I'm a little late, Jordy. I've been having trouble with my car."
"The Jetta?" Jordy asked.
"Yeah, it just turns off sometimes when I'm stopped at intersections."
"Could be your throttle cable. What year is it?"
"A 92. Pretty old, I know."
"You know, there's this thing on your throttle cable you can adjust to set the idle." Mandy laughed.
"I don't know how to do that."
"Before you go, I'll do it for you."
"Okay, thanks. That's really sweet."
She touched him on the shoulder. Jordy thought she kind of stared at him in a way that was a little vibey, but he could have been imagining it. As she passed them, Jordy noticed she avoided touching Dan. Mandy announced her presence as she approached Jordy's mom from behind and leaned over her.
"Is there anything I can get you to start off? Glass of water?"
"A margarita," Jordy's mom said. Mandy laughed politely.
"I don't know if we can do that."
"Why not?" Jordy said, taking a white plastic twins cup from a kitchen cupboard. At this stage of care, we focus on pain management, Mandy said, as if reading from a brochure. And we don't recommend mixing alcohol with this level of pain meds.
Why? Geordi said. It's not like she's going to operate heavy machinery.
Geordi's mom nodded.
You got that right.
Geordi put on his jacket. I'm going to run out and get her some margarita stuff.
Well, I can't control what you do when I'm not around.
Come on, Dan, Geordi said, and then looked Mandy in the eyes.
Don't leave until we're back.
Geordi's mom held up her left hand in a little weak wave. He'd fucking get that woman the best margarita money could buy.
There were only two liquor stores in Farmington, and they were both owned by the city, but they still had a decent enough selection. Geordi and Dan had to go to the one out on Pilot Knob Road because Geordi's ex-girlfriend Kaylee worked at the one downtown, and he still owed her money from when he bought his Glock, and there was no way they were having that stupid conversation today. There wasn't a ton of variety in the margarita mix section. Jose Cuervo, Mr. and Mrs. T, Margaritaville. Hard to tell which was the best.
Hey, Geordi asked the guy working the register, a fat old townie named Russ Arnsberg, who used to manage a sit-down pizza place that went out of business.
How's this Mr. T mix?
Well, it's good enough for who it's for, Russ said. That being people too lazy to make it themselves.
In the refrigerated section, Dan found a 24-ounce glass bottle that read, N.W. Gratz's Artisanal Margarita Preparatory Amalgamation, 100% Oregon Tilth, Certified Organic, GMO-free, cruelty-free. It was less than half the size of the other bottles and cost four times as much.
What's the deal with this stuff? Dan asked.
Wouldn't give you a nickel for a case of it, Russ said.
Geordi waved his left hand at the row of mixers.
Well, what do you fucking recommend, then?
I recommend you make your own at home. 1-1-3. That's the ratio. Easy enough, a blind pig could do it.
Geordi picked up a bottle of margarita brand mixer, which was the most expensive variety in a halfway decent size and had a chef's best taste award on the label. He yelled to Dan if he'd found the Patron.
Nope,
Dan said from the beer section.
Patron's behind the counter, Russ said. But if you're making margaritas, it's a waste of money to buy Patron.
Dan walked over, his old-fashioned flip phone in his hand.
Hey, Goldie's having people over after he gets off work tonight.
Geordi saw a white plastic container of margarita salt at the end of the row and took it. He might as well go all out.
Do you have any limes?
People don't buy 'em here, and they get moldy. They got 'em at Lou's Red Owl.
God damn it, Geordi said, putting the mixer and salt on the counter by the register.
And give me the Patron, the green box.
How's your mom doing? Russ asked, scanning the items.
Geordi shook his head. Not good. Got the hospice nurse over there right now.
Sorry to hear that.
Well, what you gonna do? Geordi said.
He just hoped Russ didn't go into the God talk like a lot of people did.
She was a good woman,
Russ said, like she was fucking dead already.
You may not know this, but she was a hell of a bowler. Back in the early 80s, we were in the same league over here. She always kicked our ass.
Huh, Geordi said. Because what the hell do you say to something like that? He wasn't there. Russ pulled the handles of a thin plastic bag around the bottles and salt and handed it to Geordi.
Yeah, well, tell her hi, and take it easy. Don't do anything I wouldn't sit on.
Back home, Geordi spread the Margaritaville mixer, the Patron, the salt, and the limes from Lou's Red Owl on the kitchen counter. Mandy ignored him from the moment the alcohol came out of the bag, which was about the time that Geordi's mom took notice.
Whoa, you didn't have to get all that, she said from her chair.
We're making you a margarita.
Dan cracked open another Coors Light.
It's gonna be the best one you ever had, Linda. How do you like it, blended or rocks and salt?
Well, blended, usually.
Blended, Geordi repeated. He opened the doors of all the cabinets, finding cups, plates, coffee mugs, breakfast cereal, A red plastic tub of Folgers, a big thing of Bailey's, some port, and a bottle of Galliano they'd had forever. After about the fifth cabinet door, a part of him wanted to yell, "So where the fuck is the blender?" But he couldn't, so he just muttered it, then took a deep breath and looked out toward the living room. "Hey, Mom, what cabinet is the blender in?"
"Next to the oven,"
she said, as loud as she could. As Jordy fumbled with the components of the Black & Decker Crushmaster, Mandy walked into the kitchen with Linda's empty water glass.
"Have you ever made margaritas before?"